The year is 1692. Residents of Salem Village are plagued with phantom figures stalking them in the night and attacks from black cats and dogs. Misfortune feels as though it lingers around every corner, and they knew exactly who to blame. Witches. Evil witches.
What a hook.
Thank you.
So, like, thematic, and, like, it felt like I was, like, audiobook.
Ooh, I was gonna say, did it feel like you were transported back to the year 1692 colonial New England?
I did.
Good.
You and brought me there.
I hope the listeners feel the same. Hello, it is finally freaking October, the best month of the whole year. My name is Ivy, and with me is...
I am Tayshia.
Yeah, and how are you, Tayshia? How is Tayshia Land now that it's October?
I'm very glad it's October. September was incredibly rough. There was a lot going on. I don't need to get into it, bring everybody down, but it was a really rough month. So I'm glad that it's October, and I'm excited to celebrate all things spooky, and hopefully that will also help lift my mood.
Oh, hopefully, but I guess it's a slightly depressing topic I'm getting into because, you know, not good things happen in witch trials, everyone is surprised to hear.
Well, I mean, for the most part, there's not really, like, you know, I know what's going to happen. There's not, it is depressing, but...
I guess, like, this happened centuries ago. It's not a big spoiler, is it? No, I feel you, though. My September was also cram-packed, a lot going on, family stuff happening. We talked about, we were in our spicy sads.
Yes.
I think that's how you put it. Yep. Yep.
The eclipse season, the spicy sads.
Oh, my God. The spicy sads. I posted on Instagram. I'm like, you guys, I'm actually losing my mind. Like, what is happening? And everyone was like, girl, it's the planets. It's the moon. So I had something to blame. Does that make us witches? they're going to come for us. Getting to the topic of this episode, because I have a lot to talk about. First of all, FYI, Tayshia did cover a lot of the elements of this history already in episode 10. Is this episode 11? Episode 12? Episode 9?
Because we've done one a month, but we had two back...
The first month.
Well, but then there was February, the two... But that was... So that can... Yeah, that counted like January and February is how I counted it. But then, what was it? August?
I did two episodes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was August. It got two episodes. So now we're like ahead one again. It was lined up with the months that each one was. So I think technically this is 11, but the one was also technically a part two. So,
You know what? I want everyone to know Tayshia and I were like counting on our fingers, like doing math in the air. Like,
it was definitely that meme.
Oh my God. The like lady standing in front of all the like graphs and math and stuff.
Yes.
Or the Charlie Kelly equations. With the red string. Yep.
Yes.
Tayshia talked about some of this in the previous episode. So apologies for any redundancy, but I don't think anyone will mind continued ramblings on this subject matter, which I chose because I think I mentioned this on the podcast. I did a research project about the Salem witch trials, so it's fresh on the brain, and it's also fitting for the season, October. Yes. You know, witches, devils, ghosts, movies like Hocus Pocus, which filmed in Salem and is an October must to watch. Mm-hmm. So that is why I am here to talk about the Salem witch trials. But another reason actually that I chose it, and I'll get to some of this more later towards the end of the episode, but there is a lot of misinformation around the Salem witch trials Common examples include that the witch trials in Salem were, for starters, that they were witches. A lot of people have this idea that they were witches and they were burned at the stake. They were not burned at the stake. They were not witches. Some people believe that the trials were entirely a plot created by the church to attack women, to steal their assets, aka money and land, or that this was all caused by a type of poisoning known as ergot poisoning. And although some of these things might factor in, it isn't the root cause of the Salem witch trials of 1692, and that is more so what I am here to talk about. So this won't really be a detailed step-by-step of the Salem witch trials and individual characters or anything like that. I will instead be setting the scene for how the Salem witch trials began. How could this even happen? The real, again, root cause. Despite what the misinformed TikToks that go viral every October say, this wasn't caused by a singular issue. This is a complex thing that leads to the hysteria that causes witch trials, and that's what I'm here to discuss. So for anyone unfamiliar with the Salem witch trials of 1692, they took place in Salem, Massachusetts, 1692. Crazy, I know. And it was a series of witchcraft accusations leading to the execution of some of the accused, 19 in total. But to get to this conclusion, these hangings and one victim who was crushed to death, we need to first understand the origin of this belief and fear in witches. Why were we trying to kill witches? And to understand this, we can also look at the religion of the settlers of the Salem area and why they came here, which is all very integral into how these events took place. So, first and foremost, what is a witch besides for me and Tayshia?
I just about spit my tea out.
I mean, it's the first of the month, and earlier I blew some cinnamon out my front door to bring abundance, so... Oh,
I forgot to do that today. I did just do my first freezer spill today, though.
Okay, so there's some tea to that, then. Okay.
I need some tea.
Yep. Oh my god. Yeah, as we sip on our tea. I meant to do a money spell, but you know, I did the cinnamon thing and that's good enough. So, what is a witch? A witch in the historical context is, in this historical context, is someone who is in league with the devil or Satan. They perform evil magics in his name. They spread misfortune to those around them. And this belief exists partly as a way to explain elements of the world which people struggled to understand. So before germ theory and knowledge on weather patterns and other things, supernatural forces were believed to be behind such happenings. This could be gods, goddesses, ghosts, revenants and vampires and other ghoulish beings, but also witches. Something unexpectedly goes wrong. Maybe it was a witch. Maybe it was Tayshia doing a freezer spell.
Watch out, everybody.
Uh-oh, yeah. don't give us any negative reviews or I'm going to do a freezer spell.
You're gonna get sent to the freezer.
Oh my god, yeah, you're going straight to the freezer. So people listening who are not into witchy stuff, they don't know any of these spells, they're just like, huh? What? Anyways, another thing about witches in this context is witches, fun fact, were also both men and women, and sometimes even animals were accused of being a witch, contrary to what most people today think. People tend to hear witch and they picture a woman, but plenty of men were also accused of being a witch. Granted, it was women more often than men, and that has to do with some of the mystical ways which we viewed women, but specifically things like pregnancy and childbirth, which was very weird, very magical. People knew that sex led to pregnancy, but when it came to how a baby could grow inside of a person, I mean, imagine living hundreds of years ago. It's a pretty like magical phenomena. And this gave the womb this magical air to it. And this, among many other things, is in part why we tend to view women more often as being the magical ones, being the witches than men, is things like this. The domestic role of women also made them more likely to be accused when someone was sick. They will probably seek out a woman in their community who knows their plants and can whip up a tincture or something to help. And this was knowledge often passed down through women over centuries, thousands of years. And, you know, let's say you're someone in the Middle Ages and you're not feeling well and you pay your elderly female neighbor to make this cure for you, and then you take it and it either doesn't help or it makes you feel worse. Well, maybe she's actually a witch. Or maybe it's kind of an opposite scenario where you're suddenly feeling sick and you remember you ate something that your old little neighbor lady baked for you. Maybe she's a witch. Maybe she put some sort of, you know, evil magics in the food that she gave you. You get the picture. And we see this also when it comes to depictions of the witch. You'll usually see them in this domestic role, especially often being older women. You know, they're wielding a broom, and there's a whole like witchy history to that I won't get into, but you'll also see them with babies, harming babies, which might stem from suspicions men had when their babies suddenly died. Is my wife a witch? Did she kill my baby? Stirring a large cauldron is another common way that witches are depicted in art, especially in the Middle Ages. And even today, this comes from the daily duty that women used to have of brewing beer and ale, which they weren't the only ones brewing it, but women primarily, this is like, you know, Western countries I'm talking about, they were, you know, domestic duties in the household, brewing often over large cauldrons. And that's another reason why you see the witch and you see the cauldron. It tends to come from the brewing of the beers and ales that people were drinking every day, because let's face it, the drinking water back then was no good. So you needed to boil it and maybe even enrich it with something. So that's a little bit behind the iconography of the witch and why we tend to liken the witch to more often women than men. But this would be like another fun topic to do on its own someday. And this belief in the witch would really take root among some groups of people, especially the more religiously devout. And this includes the Puritans, aka the English Protestants of the 16th and 17th centuries. Basically, what happened with them is over time, the Church of England took on Roman Catholic influences, and English Protestants were like, hey, we're not okay with this. You're upsetting God. This isn't how the church should be doing things. And they believed that this was evident through turmoils that they started to experience in England, which included just going back to weather patterns being blamed on supernatural forces. They went through some really bad weather patterns. Winters in England in the Middle Ages were brutally cold, and they were really long and hard to survive. Firewood was running out, food supplies are low, and it didn't help that the summers that followed were very cool, very wet, which was not ideal for crop growth. So yeah, you add famine into the mix of the daily difficulties in survival. And to the Puritans, they were like, clearly God is mad, and we think he's mad at the church because look at all this like Roman, you know, Roman Catholic stuff that they got going on. And so a bunch of English Protestants, and oh my God, there's so much more history to go into the English Protestants. Again, I'm just breezing by some of this. They were like, God's mad. We are going to get up and we are going to travel to the New World, aka the newly settled eastern coast of North America, also known as New England. And here, they hoped to create their own new society and a full covenant with God to their beliefs and their standards. This would be the new Holy Land, the new Jerusalem, which is where they got the name Salem from, the second half of Jerusalem. Oh. Fun fact, right? Fun fact.
Oh.
I actually...
Clever.
But, this idealistic Puritan dream, they were going to have this utopia and it was going to be great. It was going to be the new Jerusalem. God was going to be so happy and give them all these blessings. That was very quickly squashed upon landing here and facing the realities of what it takes to settle a unfamiliar land that already belonged to an entire group of people. more on that soon. So first of all, the environmental issues that were plaguing them in England were also happening here in the States in what is now believed to have been a global event that has been dubbed the Little Ice Age, which spanned from the 14th to mid-19th centuries, where multiple regions around the earth saw these unusually brutal winters and these cool, wet summers, which made survival difficult. So not only was, all these issues back home in England, they're like blaming it on the Roman Catholic influences in the church, and they come here. Oh, shoot. It's going on here too. Okay, well, what can we blame it on here? Well, they likened the indigenous people that they encountered to the witches and demons of the Old Testament. And so they were what was wrong. God was clearly upset because this new world is rife with the devil and his fiends. And some of these Puritan settlers, and other settlers, by the way, not everyone that came here was Puritan. A lot of them were. They would use this as one of many reasons to carry out a lot of the very early wars and attacks on the indigenous people here, believing that it was a necessary part of this godly plan to rid the land of these evils, either through, you know, sometimes a lot of people had good relationships with the indigenous people. I will throw that in. There was a lot of trade connections being built. Some of this was fine, but there were also attempts made to convert them or just all out killing. And these wars, which saw countless indigenous people killed, women and children included, this meant that not, you know, just Puritan settlers, but other settlers were gaining more land, stealing more land, to create trade routes and, you know, build new villages and new towns. But tensions, of course, would remain really high between settlers and the indigenous people here, who were very rightfully upset at the settlers. So not only was, you know, the Puritans come here, I was going to say predators, they are predators.
Pretty much.
I mean, yeah, like Freudian slip there. So not only the Puritans, they come here, and they're like, oh my God, these winters are really hard to survive. We're dying in mass numbers. We're failing to grow crops. You know, famine is all over the place. And now we're fighting and losing people to these wars that we've created with the indigenous people. So not only was firewood scarce due to these cold winters and everyone's cutting down all the trees, and also they're building all these settlements. They're really chopping down trees like crazy. They're struggling to get firewood. They couldn't go past their boundary lines due to the fears of running into indigenous people because they've been killing them. Same with crops failing. Their crops are failing. And they also can't just go out past their boundary lines to look for more, you know, to forage for food and look for more farmable land because of the same worries, being kidnapped, being killed by indigenous people. And these heightened anxieties that the early Puritan settlers had, the people starting up places like Salem, would begin to really affect them psychologically, as you can imagine. Fear of where your next meal will come from. Fear of whether or not you will have firewood on a brutally, deathly cold winter's night. And of course, fear of the indigenous people, who again, they likened to witches and demons and devils, and they believed that they were the ones causing a lot of this. And on top of all of this was the fear that these evils would breach the walls of their villages and towns and bleed into their own communities. The devil was here. The devil has a plan. He's trying to take over, and the Puritans were fighting so hard on God's behalf to reclaim it and make this a holy land. And this worry of witches infiltrating their communities is precisely what happened on a cold winter evening in the household of Reverend Samuel Paris in Salem Village, 1692. Salem at the time was split between Salem Town and Salem Village. There was two Salems. Salem Village was a little bit smaller. They were much more devout and kind of isolated from the larger Salem Town. And the two of them, especially the prominent families within each one, bickered and argued over property lines and politics and church-related issues. And during this growing turmoil in their communities, in comes this new reverend, Reverend Samuel Paris, who moves into the Salem Village Parish. A parish, for anyone that doesn't know, is a house supplied to the reverend and his family by the local residents, who are also supposed to give donations, kind of payments in a way, to the reverend and his family. One common form of donations and payments was firewood, especially when there's firewood shortages. What better currency is there? But again, there was a shortage. People needed their firewood. People stopped giving it to him. So the reverend's like panicking, freaking out about not having enough firewood. He's writing about it in his diary and saying, I don't know if we're going to have any for tonight. And it's affecting his family too. A lot of people, I'll add, just also really didn't like Reverend Paris. He was kind of, my understanding is people just didn't like the way he preached. They didn't like his methods. He was kind of a stickler. He was also boring. His sermons were so painfully long, and a lot of people just didn't like him. It's another reason people were like, we're not giving you our firewood. We need our firewood. And adding salt to the wound, there's so much going on. It's very miserable to have lived in New England during this time. But there's a lot of sickness that's starting to go around. And specifically around this time, 1692, Paris himself had a lot of these very sick people constantly coming in and out of the parish for prayers. People are coughing and crying out to God and crowding in his home. And some people are remaining in his home for days and days trying to get over whatever's sick, thinking that as long as they are there and he keeps praying over them all day, every day, it's going to cure them. So the Paris household was really not a fun place to be. And all the while, with all of this going on, there's children in the Paris household who watch and who worry. And I really want to paint this picture as best as I can for our listeners to help us all understand how this way of life was affecting these people mentally, psychologically. So really try and picture this. You're in an unfamiliar land. You are at near constant fear of indigenous invasions in your community, believing them to be witches. Winter is numbingly cold, and you've run out of firewood for the night. It is darker than dark, and you believe that there are any number of supernatural evils lurking in the shadows of night who are causing these misfortunes. All the while, your belly is rumbling because the summer crops grew very little, and autumn's harvest was detrimental. There isn't enough food. Family members and neighbors are sick. They are huddling around their homes for warmth, all the while sharing stories almost entirely from the Bible, because these are very devout people who lived and breathed the Bible. When they had a question, when they needed to know something, they turned to their Bibles. And with all of this going on, okay, this is going to lighten the mood a little bit. The Puritan drink of choice was a type of hard cider. So when life sucks, which it did, there was a lot of overindulgence in hard ciders. And, you know, in the morning after these horrible, long, cold, dark nights with scary things that they believed were outside, you know, the boundaries of their community, these evils, you know, morning comes and all of a sudden men are running around recalling these encounters with these phantom black dogs and cats, which they claimed, you know, were attacking them in their homes during the night, crashing in through their windows. They would claim to have seen these devilish, shadowy figures who were standing outside of their home at night as well, only to vanish with the rising of the sun. And so, to us hearing this, we're like, okay, you probably had a little bit too much hard cider. Perhaps you dreamed it. Perhaps your eyes played tricks on you. Any number of things could cause this. But these are Puritans, going back to explaining the world through a supernatural kind of religious lens to the Puritans. These were clearly demons, devils, witches. And whispers and rumors of these eyewitness sightings also started to spread like wildfire. Evil was afoot. It was right outside of their doors. And it would all boil over when two young girls in the household of Reverend Samuel Paris began to show signs of some kind of sickness. They were writhing on the ground, flapping their arms like birds, seeing things that weren't there. They were screaming. They were barking like dogs. And again, today, we read this and it's like, okay, these kids were going through a lot. Psychological damage, like, you know, there's something going on with these kids living these horrible, miserable lives. And all the adults are freaking out and panicking and talking about these ghostly things running about. So it kind of makes sense to us. But removing the modern lens to Reverend Paris and the doctor that he consulted, their behavior appeared supernaturally inflicted, possibly from bewitchment. And as word of possible bewitchment in these girls started to spread, on top of all these other rumors going around, one of the neighbors, Mary Sibley, decided to try a folk remedy of sorts called a witch's cake. This cake was made with the urine of the bewitched and was then fed to a dog. The idea being that the bewitchment would either be transferred to the dog, but some people said that what this would cause is that the dog would actually be able to lead them to the witch in question. Who knows? But what we do know is that the witch cake didn't work. The girls were still behaving the same. The dog did not lead them to a witch. And after learning of the baking of this witch cake, Reverend Paris was furious because he didn't know. He found out afterwards. And to him at the time, he was worried that witchcraft was present. He was worried that the girls were bewitched. But now he was sure of it because of this witch cake. It was like fighting with fire, using witchcraft to try and deal with witchcraft. Like, if it wasn't in the house, well, it's been invited in now. It's official. There are witches that have infiltrated their own communities. And The girls would go on to list three other women who they claimed to be witches harming them. With most of the accused, they quickly learned that to deny being a witch, to deny these accusations, would be pointless with the Puritan men that were put in charge of dealing with this problem of witches in their communities. To deny it showed your guilt, and it only led to threats of torture, prolonged time in jail, and even death. So these girls accused three women, and most of these women would go on to accuse more women, and then they would accuse people, and men would be accused eventually. There was a dog that was accused and killed at one point. But this web of accusations would spread so far, it would even reach nearby towns and villages like Boston. It reached that far, and soon there was hundreds of people that had all been accused of being a witch because, I mean, yeah, the best course of action, if someone says you're a witch and you're like, well, I can't say I'm not, because they're going to say, yes, you are, and we're going to hang you. So you go, yes, I'm a witch, but it's because so-and-so is a witch and they made me sign the devil's book or, you know, do something else to be in covenant with the devil. So it's not my fault. It's theirs. Okay, now that person is arrested. They're brought in, they're questioned, and they go, oh, yeah, yeah, actually, so I am, but also it was these two people. And so we can see how the web of blame spread as far as it did. And in the end, as stated in the beginning of the episode, 19 of the accused, who, again, primarily maintained innocence, would be needlessly killed, all by hanging, except for one man who was crushed to death with heavy stones. And so as we can see, the root cause of the Salem witch trials was this very deep and strong belief in witches, one which the Puritans, I don't know if I mentioned this yet, but I mean, the Puritans had all sorts of witch trials that were going on in England that they saw. And so this was a belief that they brought here with them to this new world. And the sparks that lit the fire for the witch trials here was these turmoils and these hardships, the effects of the little ice age and the famine and the freezing, the growing stress and anxiety which followed, and which all spiraled into full-blown hysteria around witches that they believed were present. And I'll also add at this point, the Salem witch trials were not the first witch trials to happen in the U.S. They weren't the last ones to happen in the U.S., but the Salem witch trials are the most infamous of them. And circling all the way back to the very beginning of the episode again, these alternate explanations that we like to hear, like, this was a money and a land grab, or this was all just misogyny, or this was all ergot poisoning. These very well could have been present to some degree. Selfish gains, I'm absolutely sure, influenced sometimes who accused who of being a witch.
Right.
Yeah, if your neighbor that you really dislike and you fight with them every morning, let's say they got some really nice property. Sure would be nice if they were accused and hung, and now that property could be yours for the taking. Wouldn't that be so nice?
But, oh, convenient.
Yeah, yeah, nifty. But even in a case like this, if you really disliked someone, you may have genuinely believed that they were a witch. You know, it would explain why they were so disagreeable, and you might think, you know what? I think they're actually a witch and they don't deserve that land. I deserve that land. So it could have been made up, or they could have genuinely believed that their neighbor was a witch. We can't say for sure. This also definitely wasn't the sole cause, because many of the accused and hung were poor or even homeless. They had no assets, no money, no property for anybody to gain. And this is also kind of when the idea of the misogyny theory comes into play. You'll hear a lot of people, TikTok, say that the witch trials were all an attack on women. especially those who set a bad example of what a woman should be. So the church was killing them to make an example of them. You know, this could be women who dressed in a way to seek male attention, women who didn't attend church, women who sang and danced. And, you know, which, by the way, the Puritans were very kind of boring. They were like, no bright colors, no singing, no dancing. Like, if it wasn't like something devoted to the Bible or daily chores, you're not doing it. So there's a lot of reasons that someone could be a bad example in the community. But again, not all of the victims here were women. A few of them were men, and some of them were devout churchgoers. They, you know, one of them, oh my gosh, was it Dorothy? I can't remember the woman's name. But, you know, one of these women who was hung, she was extremely devout. She went to church every day. She devoted her whole life. People were writing letters being like, she's innocent. And a lot of these people of this devout nature, they were to admit to being a witch when they weren't, to admit to betraying God and betraying the covenant was something that they just couldn't do. They were like, I'm not going to damn my soul. I am innocent. And they did it up until their death. So this was not just an attack on women. It wasn't just an attack on bad women, because not all of them were quote unquote bad women, and not all of the victims were women. And then there's the other main theory I've mentioned, which is ergotism. Some people believe that this was all caused by a type of poisoning caused by the fungus ergot, which affects grains like rye, which we know the Puritans grew and consumed. And these grains that they were growing and storing were at risk of fungus and molds because of these cool, damp summers, threatening their stability in terms of freshness and longevity. So it's very possible that some accounts of phantom figures or even the girls writhing and acting strangely were actually caused by ergotism, which does cause hallucinations and strange physical sensations. But again, it certainly wasn't the case for all or even most. These girls, the bewitched, were acting almost on command at times. During trials, they would begin to act crazy, and they would act like this at the mere point of a finger by the accused witch. And then when the accused witch would point their finger away, suddenly the girls were fine. And if this was all ergotism, symptoms couldn't be controlled on a whim like that, meaning that the afflicted, the bewitched, were probably acting on their own free will. But this could have been intentional. You know, some people think that, you know, like, this kind of goes back to personal quarrels or personal gains people were trying to get. You know, someone tells their daughter, hey, say this person is a witch, act crazy when they look at you or point at you in the court. That could have happened. But some of these women were quite young. These were children sometimes that we're talking about that were these victims of bewitchment. And when it comes to hysteria, in this case, mass witch hysteria, some of these, you know, again, quote unquote, victims of bewitchment, they could have truly believed that they were bewitched. Maybe it wasn't ergotism. Maybe they weren't intentionally faking it. But something in their subconscious mind, I'm not a psychologist, so I don't know all of the proper terminologies, but they could have absolutely believed that they were bewitched, and they could have been acting out in these ways as a result of this hysteria. And I don't know, I think this all, I kind of summarized what can cause the Salem witch trials pretty well. I'll probably stop here. I could keep going and going, but I do hope that we all have a better idea of the realities and complexities behind an event like this and what can actually cause these witch trials to happen, what was kind of going on behind the scenes, and that this was due to no singular issue. Again, despite what the freaking viral TikToks will try to tell you. There was one TikTok, it made me so mad. And this one TikTok was the reason I chose it as a research project, or the topic of my research project, because this lady was like, the Salem witch trials were a land grab. And I just had to set my phone down and step away for a little bit. And anyways, and again, I'm going to say it again. I'm going to say it so many times for the rest of this month. The witches in Salem, the accused, weren't real witches and they weren't burned at the stake. And I really just got to hammer that in at the end of this episode, because just this morning I commented on like 5 different TikToks being like, the witches weren't burned at the stake. That happened overseas. That didn't happen here. And even when they burned them on the stake, you know, in Europe, usually they were hung first or killed by some other means, and then their body was burned as a display. Very rarely was anyone ever burned alive. Anyways, that's some witch hysteria for us all, and the mechanisms behind witch hysteria, aka the Salem witch trials of 1692, fueled by environmental issues and social issues and the psychological damage that it caused. Tayshia, do you have anything to do? You have anything to say? My throat hurts.
No, I'm sure. No, I think you did a really great job of covering a lot of the different things. Because I remember I also was very interested in the trials growing up, and you know, like, reading the Crucible in school and things like that. And it was always like the ergot poisoning, or like just like
we're gonna boredom.
Right. Like, you know, and it's so hard looking at it now with our modern lenses, you know, not not really being able to put ourselves into their shoes of their buckled shoes of, you know, like you were saying, their, you know, how the environment was and like how cold and just dreary and dreadful everything was, and how religion was everything to them. And I mean, when you look at things from that perspective, it definitely makes things make more sense. And as for why it like took off so much.
There was, oh my gosh, I feel like I left out so much. So I'm so sorry to, you know, everyone that was expecting like more, but I mean, there's so much that you could talk about here, because something I left out was it was just before the trials in 1692, there had been a reverend that was killed, probably by indigenous people. I want to say it was maybe like Maine or something. I can't remember what state it was. I'm really bad at my states in the U.S. But there was a reverend killed not too far. And so word of this got to Salem. And I mean, boom, that just sparked even more panic. And now you have Reverend Paris fearing for his life because the indigenous people, rightfully so, were very upset and were like, stop doing what you're doing. Not, you know, justifying killing in any way, but, you know, I'm just saying, that's kind of what happens when you come and steal people's land.
Right.
But yeah, there was just, I mean, there was basically life really freaking sucked, and that manifests into a lot of things when you're people who don't understand how the natural world works. And I think that's a good place to wrap it up. Listeners, you can let us know if you want a continuation on this, or if there's a specific about this that you'd like for us to talk about as its own episode someday in the future. Let us know. I didn't want to approach this and just have it be another like chronological step by step of the trials, because a gajillion amazing podcasts and authors have already been doing this. One of my sources that I used for my research project, and so where I got a lot of this information from, was the book The Witches by Stacey Schiff. 10 out of 10 recommend. I didn't technically read it. I listened to it on audiobook over a few days, but it was a really good listen. I mean, it's probably the most comprehensive book about the entirety of the witch trials. And she pulled from a lot of primary sources. Some of them were sources that were like new at the time when mm-hmm. the book was written. And so, yeah, I'm a huge The Witches by Stacey Schiff fan. So if you want more, definitely go check that out. And on that note, my throat and my vocal cords are fried. And so thank you for listening. I hope everyone has a amazing October. Go follow us on Instagram at Odd Anthropology. We're also on Facebook and Substack, where I do we do weekly posts called Teaching Tuesdays. Although I skipped the Teaching Tuesday this week and I feel really guilty about it, but oh my gosh, not to bring the mood down even more, but Jane Goodall just passed away the day that we're recording this. So we're probably going to dedicate our next Teaching Tuesday post on Substack to her. Speaking of Substack, we also have over 3,000 followers on there now, which is pretty bonkers. I don't even know how many podcast listens we have at this point. It's kind of hard to keep up with, but thank you everyone for listening. Find us on our socials. All my sources will be linked below in the show notes. If you're wanting to learn even more, feel free to reach out. You can also email us at oddanthropology@gmail.com for topic suggestions, feedback on our episodes, and, you know, just to say, hey, you guys are great, and then we won't do a freezer spell on you. So
exactly. I was going to say, yeah, and don't forget, if you say something mean, you're going in the freezer.
You're going in the freezer. Yep. I think that's a great note to end on. Thank you for listening. And goodbye. Wait, happy Halloween, bye. Too, because wait, you're not going to hear from us until after Halloween. So happy Hallows Eve, happy Samhain, happy whatever you might be celebrating this month.
Yes, enjoy your spooky season. Goodbye. Mm-hmm.
Eat all the candy. Goodbye.
And the pumpkin spice.
Drink your pumpkin spice lattes.